This is channel one over, channel one over, and I'm continuing now the tape from the Grundig that I started on the other side of this tape. I started on channel one right. Now I'm going ahead with the tape from the Grundig, transferring it from the Grundig to channel one over.
You cooked it, no.
Uh-huh. Well, you ready now,
yeah,
boy,
right here.
You cook your own dog food. You put 3/4 meal and 1/4 self-rising flour.
Uh-huh.
And put...
You use some self-rising flour.
Yeah. And put soda in there and a little baking powder.
Uh-huh.
So that... And make it... The bread be kind of yellow with soda.
Yeah.
See, dog's got so much acid in the system, you see.
Yeah.
Now, this is the way I cook it. A lot of people put water and salt, or no salt in it, and cooks it that way. Well, that ain't too good for a dog. That's too hard on them. Don't digest good.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wet mine.
They don't chew it much anyhow, do they?
I wet mine when I feed it. When washing dishes, you know, of course, what we're using today ain't what I had back then.
Yeah.
I use oxygen soap and to wash dishes instead of powders. Then the dish water, I saved it and wet my dog feed with it. And you got the grease and stuff and all the waste out of your, off your plates into your dog feed. And you save that. And,
Now you don't do that. You don't have that now.
No, I don't do that. I don't have as good a stove as I had back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I used a Nesco kerosene stove that cost $39.50 wholesale and made the blue blaze,
yeah,
and the best one, and I used it for years and I worked it over and rebuilt it. My wife said she wanted to set it and get another one. I said, go ahead. I said, don't sell my stove though. She sold it. I just spent $6.50 on it, bought the parts and fixed it myself, and she sold it for $5 on the credit. And they used it a year, and I wanted it back and was trying to get it back and afraid to say anything to them. One day they decided to buy a gas stove and they turned it back to me and said I could have that stove back. They didn't want to have to use it a year and never did pay me a penny on it. And I'd have given them a $5 bill any time to let me have my stove back and what they owed me on it. But I just lucky that I got it back. Well, I kept it. You see, we separated long about that time and I kept it until just about as long as I could use it. And I'd refix it and buy wicks and flue and things,
yeah,
put in.
Now your dog food, you mixed it up.
Mixed it up good.
You mixed up with water or with some of the grease?
I mixed it up with water, then I put grease in it and mixed it some with the grease, you see.
And then cooked it.
And then I put a good coat of grease on the bottom. Then, after I sat it down and cooked a little bit, I took my 2 or 3 spoonfuls and spread around and smeared it. Layer all over the top of it. And I'd ease it in there while I'd eaten breakfast, you know. Then I'd change the top from the bottom and I had just about that much casein in the reservoir, you see. And then I'd be called a tank. I think that's the main thing that most people would call it. I'd leave about that much casein in there and I'd go on to work and I got ready to feed my dog that night. When I come in from work, you know, cornbread would be sitting there already cooked in the stove.
Yeah.
Out.
Now, what else did you put in it besides that? Anything you had?
Well, I down in
vegetable.
Yeah, but after you mix your corn, you didn't cook the vegetables.
No, I see. You
cooked your cornbread.
I see.
Then when you was making it up, you see, I used about a 10 or 12 quart bucket, you know. And the time I got to mixing it up, and I'd have that damp. You can give it to them dry sometimes, but they it's really better to wet it a little bit. Mm-hmm.
When you're feeding it to them.
Yeah. But the stuff that you use today for the washing powder and things wouldn't be good for them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's got too much potash in it. It eats your stomach, sir. Mm-hmm. But Oxygen soap back at that time was one of the finest things at all for a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that. I didn't have to worm mine about once or twice a year for using it to get feeding them that way.
Yeah.
And like it is now, I've wormed a whole lot often.
Did you ever hear of worming a horse or a mule by giving them tobacco?
Yeah. I give my dogs tobacco to worm.
How do you give it to them?
Just make it about the size of any finger here, and I usually take fried meat grease, put all over it, and then give it to them like a capsule, open the mouth, push it down the back of the tongue, and that.
Oh, yeah.
And
they don't just take it free will.
Sometimes they'll get to, but most of them don't want it.
If you give it to them in a good piece of meat and pitch it to them, they'll swallow it whole.
Well, sometimes they get wise to that, and they'll sling that out and eat the meat. I just take it, open my mouth, and I train them, and after I get them trained good, they'll open their mouth and swallow it pretty good. Those two old dogs just swallow right down for them.
Put it down over the tongue and then close the mouth and make
rub
it good.
Rub the soap down that way. Push it right on the back of the side.
What do you feed them today, Mr.
Beg your pardon?
What do you feed your dog?
I'm using Jim Dandy dog food mostly.
Yeah.
See, they have that
bound. They eat a lot, don't they?
It takes about 8 cents to, I'd say 8 cents a day to feed them. They won't hardly eat a pound a day of it.
Can you feed all of them or each one?
Each one, 8 cents.
Yeah.
And you take a lot of these fellas that drink, you know, they'll tell me, get at me about the old dogs, and they'll spend $10 or $15 a week, and maybe $25 a drink it.
Oh,
well, it don't cost me that to feed my dog. Cost me about $7 or $8 a week at all. And so that I used to keep 12 and 13 all the time. I've cut them down a little bit. And of course, in the fall of the year, sometimes I'd get up to, I've had the size 26.
Dogs?
Uh huh. But I was keeping the ones I liked the best and so were the rest of them. Mm-hmm. So it's about. Kept mine down about 12, 13 for my own use, you see.
Your dogs won't come up when you're out hunting or got them out working them. They won't come up to anybody but you.
They won't go up to your house either. And if they know you now, if you've hunted with me and they know you and you're loading dogs, you may could get them there that way. If you'd loading other dogs and they'd been running with you, like you and I went hunting. And sometimes there's a lot of them won't let you do that.
But you'd have to associate with them a good long while before they'd pay you attention.
And, of course, they won't bite you. They'll just stay out of your way.
Oh.
They won't bite you. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes them do like they do, some of them, those young dogs, and people scared them when I first took them out of the kennel and tied them out to learn to be tied or so I could handle them, like going to carry them off anywhere. Handle them and tie them and going out to hunt and come back, you know, picking up another dog, you know, and leaving some of them tied for the others to stay when they got back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes put some of them out, tie that one right there, you see, and if the other comes up, you can always just stop and lie down with that dog.
You were saying, the other day, on Thursday, that first day I talked to you, that these foxes will go around the houses early in the night looking for rats.
Yes, sir. I used to think that they'd come up there hunting your chickens.
Mm-hmm.
But they only catch a chicken hardly ever just when the food is real scarce and they have young ones. You know, most anything when something's perishing, you know, do that. Just like you and I would.
So if you run the foxes early in the night, you'll run up around people's houses.
More than you will to go in the morning. See, they get back out of their mouths when you hear people begin to get up, you know, they go back away. But I didn't know for a long time, and I tried to kill all the frogs. And after that, and I bought.
Yeah.
See, I paid $1.50 a piece when $1.50 was money.
Well, now, how far back was that when you...
That was back in the 30s and 28.
That's far back.
Back in a little farther back, that 26.
Now, by that time, all the foxes had been hunted out.
Well, we had lots of them. No, there's some disease that they're flea. It's a mite, and it'll get in the hairs, and it'll eventually kill them, and it gets in the den that keeps them killed back. They have trouble up north now in different places.
Yeah.
See, I take the hunter's horn, and we know what they're doing in all states, you know, and what's going on.
This little dog, there's been no dog around here since I've been out here.
Yeah.
And we've been keeping him clean and everything. But I saw him yesterday that he gets full of fleas. Now, why would he get fleas around here?
Well, they get on chickens, birds, fowls. See, there's several different kinds of fleas. And dogs, other dogs coming through your yard. Well, and the fleas jumped off here and get on your puppy there.
Well, they don't come through here much.
Well, they don't have to come. If they come by and a few fleas hops off of them.
Well, now, a flea won't just live out there
and rats, they get on there. Fleas get on rats, too. Chickens, ducks, or anything. See, there are fleas that works more on fowls, but if it does get on in the mind, and that chicken might get on your dog, is the hardest thing in the world to get rid of.
Yeah.
Kerosene, sulfur, and grease is the best thing that I ever used.
Kerosene, sulfur, and grease.
But you know that, as far as I know, there hasn't been any dogs in this yard or anything else.
Well, they come through at night.
I guess that could be.
Yeah, they come around.
We put the dog up at night.
Well, those fleas will stay around under the house.
Oh, yeah,
they'll
stay. There's one parasite, and I think I'll have it up there. And it's a mite. And it gets in the dog house, you know, or around your place. You cannot have a dog die in 6 months, and by the way, it'll still live.
Still there.
And best thing to do is before you keep that little dog out there, get you some 5%. 4 or 5% malathion and sprinkle on the ground, and you just have one small dog, get your Sergeant's flea powder and put on it and sprinkle it around right where he stays.
Yeah.
But you can get some of the malathion and just sprinkle it around.
Yeah, sprinkle
there.
It around the ground if you get them infested pretty bad and around the house. I'd kill roaches and
he wouldn't lick it up, would he?
No.
No, he won't bother that. But it's best to put it down and keep him away from that if you can. But not let it be on too fresh and just let the fleas and roaches and termites and things like that, he'll kill anything growing over.
Yeah, but
right.
He get on his feet and lick his
feet. Yeah, he could, but they don't usually, they don't like the taste of it. And they don't like the smell of it either.
No.
They don't want to lick it. They don't want to lick it.
Just got here.
Just did. I thought it was going around. I didn't think about it coming this way.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had a rain in a week over here.
You catch me at the wrong time. I've been lying down sleeping and I'm driving to get up. I mean, about talking or anything like that, thinking.
You know what I was going to ask you, Mac? You know, I don't know a thing about hunting dogs.
No.
I never hunted dogs. So, you just have to sort of set your pace and, you know what people are interested in, and don't depend on me to ask you a good question.
Well,
but we haven't actually done much hunting in here.
Well, listen, if you go out, as soon as I can get to where I can and we can go out, hunting after you go out with me. Once or twice, of course, I've got a pack of trained dogs now. Most of them's young.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fine.
And too old. Then you can come back and you see a lot of yourself, but not as good as it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
About your dogs.
Yeah.
And I can tell you some stories about some races and things I've seen them do.
Uh-huh.
Seen the fox do, and just like that railroad track, walking that track, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I reckon the other day I left out some of the main parts. I don't remember where that, you want to start something different than that, don't you, what you had the other day?
That's a good one to start from.
From that one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I got that in there the other day where the little speck of female dog Allah called her Julie. And when that captain, when Mr. Disbury came up there, and that cat dodged around a while, run a while, with all the dogs after, he went back that same railroad track and tried that again.
Yeah.
And when it did, that little dog that found
that
it, she
dog.
Just pulled it and went way back up there, just a little bit. I heard the bark up there, and the rest of them all went to it, and it just took them 2 hours to catch, run him down and catch him. They just picked him up on the ground. And I didn't, where I put that in there, I didn't tell as much of it as I should have the other day. So that I can tell you a story about a fella in North Alabama. The story in North Alabama, that fella up there in 1914 had won 7 different counties. And in Fox County. So that was back in the horse and buggy days. So that in that fall, I took my dog out, went out there the night before, and caught, he treed 9 possums. And so that I tell my brother about it, and they didn't believe that old fox dog mine would do that. I said, well, I've been doing that all the time with him. Pick up a sack and an axe and walk off from my house and line it. Don't blow my bowling horn. Take no. And he was 3 possums. They couldn't believe it.
Now say that again. You pick up your sack and what?
Sack and axe.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could cut the trees down and just a coker bag.
Yeah.
I see burlap's really the correct name.
Yeah.
And go out and he'd 3 possums. Well, my oldest brother wanted to go that night, and the next night, so we started the possum on him. I heard someone blow a horn down the road, and I looked at those sort of come up out and run with me, you see. So that, I said, let's walk back out the road. That may be those fellas coming up to run that bad running dog again, mine. And I said, I don't want to miss it if they come. So we walked back out to the road and waited till they got up there. And I told them, I said, you all look like I blowed my horn, mine came back to me. I says, look like you all got some fine dogs. I says, we have. One brother spoke up and said, I have one. I won 7 different counties with. Said he beat every dog in 7 different counties so far.
Now, was that one of your neighbors there?
No, that's some from, 15 miles that drove in there with the wagon to run against their dogs against mine.
Uh-huh. Oh, they come in there where you were?
Yeah, they're coming up there, but they should have let me know, but they didn't, you know. So that,
Well, a lot of people don't do that, you know. They just come
I just turned and blowed my horn. My dog came back, you know. Well, I blew that horn. You couldn't have got him to run across him.
Is that right?
I had him train that way.
Oh, yeah.
So that went on back, and I asked him, I said, where are you going? He says, anywhere we can find the fox. So I said, well, we'd have to go about 5 miles. You'd have to go about 5 miles from here. Uh-huh.
Now, what time of year was that?
That in the fall of the year.
Yeah.
That's in the fall of 1914 now.
Yeah.
So that we went back to the house, and the brother didn't go. And they had about 40, 50 dogs. They had Walkers, Julys, and Black and Tans, and mixed breed dogs. So when we got up to the house, I told him I'd get a horse to ride. I believe went and got a mule. We had a little mule there. He liked to fox on, and I liked to ride it. I went and got him, put the saddle on him, and didn't get a horse. So that when we I got back out there, this dog of mine had his head up just kind of waiting for me to go with a big flag tail. It looked just like this one that I lost this last year.
Yeah.
Big flag tail going this way. Haven't you noticed these here?
Yeah.
Well, I've been hunting flag tails ever since then to get these, and when I got these. And that's the first one I'd find when I got these.
Mm-hmm.
So that Mr. Some of the fellows' names were Bushell, and some of them was Westers, and well, I know just as well as had the best dog. He lived at Pocahontas, Alabama. Buck Bess was his name. He was the one who had the little July that nothing couldn't run with. So that he says, "You got a fine looking dog there." I said, "Sometimes he'll run a little bit." I never would say nothing until we went hunting, because they couldn't kid me if I wouldn't drag on the dog.
Yeah.
So that before we got there, we was wondering who we could have get for judges. Didn't have most everybody in that crowd had a dog, and they weren't supposed to be a judge.
Yeah.
Well, we met three fellas before we got there, and I told them, I says, "You all been saying that my dog didn't run like everybody said he did." I said, "Now here's a man that had, Mr. Best has a dog here that has won 7 different counties." And I said, "We're going to run a contest race tonight, and we need 3 judges. Can we get you all to go with us and be the judges? You all don't have any dogs." They says, "Yes, we'll go." They stayed right with us. And we went on, and when we got there, every time my dog started on the hunting, some of their dogs would take after it and bark on his track. And he had turned, went to growl, and he'd come back to me. And we got into the hunting. Now, you got it? When we got into the hunting ground, I stopped on gravel a hill and told them, said, "Keep their dogs there. We'd take about 5 or 6 and start them the way that from the Strike Park." I said, "If they won't run my dog, he'd go and find one." So that we started walking on out and let them keep all but about 5 or 6 dogs. We had one walker, and that his little July, and that big flag tail walking Maryland that I had, and a black dog that my friend had that hunted with me. We took those to Strike, about 5 of them. So after a little, about a mile down, we back down on the side of the big hill. We heard this dog of mine open. He began trailing, and after a little, some of the rest of them went to him, and they began trailing.
And you knew he was a fox. He wasn't set out on anything.
Yeah, he wasn't a thing but a fox. Because he didn't do that when I blew that horn. He didn't want to run nothing but a fox.
Uh-huh.
So that, went on and went trailing going west. And Mr. Bess hollered and got his dog excited, and she got in the road and circled 2-4, and the fox turned back to the right, back north, and then turned back to east about 2 miles back in there, and going across some bluffs and cliffs and on Splunge and Blackwater Creek. And they went back west of the Nyers on the point of a gravel hill about 2-3 miles in there. So that I told them, I says, "If we are going up here, back to up there and get on that road we were going down and go way back in there, it'll turn to the left and the mine will be in there by the time we can get over there." He's going that way, and he'd already gone out away from everything but the old walker dog, and he's about a mile behind.
Now, you weren't on your little mule then?
No, we just sitting there, we're standing roads, you see. But I had the mule there to ride in and out down those roads, you see. But they'd made big circle around about four or five miles, didn't they? And you couldn't ride riding behind them because of bluffs and cliffs and creeks and branches. And so that he had gone way back, going back east then, passing us going the other way with a fox.
She's way in front.
These judges said if that dog jumps that far, says you can shit in my old hat. You can cut that out if you want to do that. I says, you want to bet on it? And they says, no. I says, I never heard him open on a fox track because he didn't jump it before he quit. So it took him an hour and 35 minutes, and he got on the cross a while, and we cut him across, and so that I told him, I says, we'll walk going down now if you all won't put him in ahead of him. I said, if you do that a time or two, you won't have a dog to run with you. And I said, wait till just he crosses the road and won't bother him. And I said, he won't go to slapping that back to them. So that they just couldn't stand it, and they had to go out there and put theirs in again. And this little dog had won, you know, it doesn't come back to us, and we're trotting along with us. And so that she's supposed to, the way to judge him now, she would have been scratched then. And all of them, but that old Walker dog in mine, it doesn't come back. It's a cold and bad trail. They went on down there and they put him in the head. And I said, you all did the wrong thing. I says, now, when he comes up to here and find out they struck ahead of him, he knows what to do for those dogs. So they're trying to run it down in there and running over the track, and he didn't say a word till he got on the other side of him, and he began to open him again. He had a good tongue. The way he barked, he said, oh, and so that he went trailing on, and he got away from them again, went way down in on Blackwater and jumped about 3 or 4 miles down there and jumped it and brought it right back across that same hill. And their dog struck ahead of him again. Well, it did. When he heard them bark ahead of him that time, he could tell that they hit it ahead of him again. He quit where he was at, and next time I heard him bark, he was right up on the front end, and it was about 2 miles from mine. Just in the, so I went 5 minutes, he was at 2 miles right up on the front end again. And
well, now, how you figure, what do you do there?
Huh?
What did he do to get ahead of him?
He just went right direct straight to him, and he didn't open anymore and didn't run the track until he caught up. He wouldn't bark on covered track. He'd just go right on right straight to him. And he could really get up and go.
Yeah.
And so that...
he lit out ahead and got to the dog.
Yeah, he went right straight to the dog, you see, and see the fox are dodging around in different ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he went direct to the dog, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just natural born fox dog anyway. He knew how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they struck ahead of him, it didn't mount a few, just took him a few minutes to catch up. So that...
But now your other dogs, when they struck ahead of them, they quit.
No, they...
That wasn't the reason.
No, he stuck right in with them, but he soon took the lead when he got there.
But the other dogs?
Yeah, well, the other about five or six was running with them. Then they went on across and back about 2 miles back in there, and would have had to be far up on the gravel hill. That's a small mountain is what it was. A lot of people, it'd be a mountain here. So that they... when they jumped, they had it running in. He'd already jumped the fox, you see. And so the rest of them put all that 40 dogs in with them. And you know there's one dog, two dogs last, most of them didn't last 30 minutes, and there's two dogs stayed 55 minutes with that little July and that dog of mine. And they left and went out of here and going west, and they went about 10 miles. We didn't follow them, but I knew where they was going to. We couldn't follow them in there going in. We back about 10 miles from there on New River. Well, we stayed there, and I told them.
Now, they still following that fox?
Following that fox. And it started at about 9 o'clock that night.
Well, how far will a fox run?
These are red fox. They'll run 15, some red fox go 40 miles. Yeah. So that when they went out of here, and I told them, I says, they'll come back. They'll be back in here, and we'll just stay. By the time we drive and get back in there where they're going, I says, they'd come back more than likely, and we'll just stay here by the fire and wait. Well, they didn't get back out at 11 o'clock then. And they didn't, about 12 o'clock then. They didn't come back in here until 4 o'clock the next morning. And I could hear them coming, and I could tell going over those hills, down in the hollers and valleys and on those creeks, I could tell one of the dogs was ahead.
And it's still running that same fox.
Same fox. And it sounded like it was mine, but I wasn't for sure. But every time we'd seen them, we've seen them five or six times, and they crossed the road right where the judge is, and they had to see the fox to score the dogs. And every time we went by us and crossed, this dog of mine was ahead of anything was out. Well, after 4 o'clock the next morning, when they come back through over the gravel hill, they put that same pack of arrested dogs in with them. And I was wondering if they didn't leave them then, if they'd run all night.
Yeah.
And so that every time they passed, the judge, you see, had to score my dog. He was ahead. He had the fox barking right. The foxes went there. They seen the track. The fox won. They had to go down and see the track for it. The next morning, about daylight, they was running around. He dodging back in there again, you see. So I told him, I said, now here's a tree about 8 o'clock. I said, that fox will go in the hole way back on across over yonder. We'll just stay here. And I said, he'll make several circles around in here before he goes there. But I said, about 8 o'clock, and I was about 6 then. I said, he'll tree. And 8 o'clock, I heard this dog of mine. Well, I got a little ahead of my story there. We was out there, and it's coming back, and there's both of them running, and two rested dogs was running with them. But I couldn't tell what they had, just getting as good of it as those two rested, and those two tired. After a little, I seen mine come up in the road, and it run the road a piece right towards us, and then turned out. So that I think to myself, if you can't run no faster than that, when that other dog gets up there, she may leave you. And when she got up there, she couldn't run any faster than he could. And couldn't run quite as fast because she wasn't keeping up. She was about 50 and 100 yards behind and 200 yards behind all the time, every time they passed her, across the roads. So that they left then and went right on over in there and dodged around a little bit. And after a little, I heard my dog bark treed at 8 o'clock the next day. He barked tree, and I blowed my horn. I says, he'll stay there a little bit, and if I blow my horn, he hears his horn, he'll quit right then, come on out.
Uh-huh.
And he come on out and brought their dogs on out too, you know.
Yeah.
One dog run with him that night. Now that little dog had won all the races. Well, I asked him, I said, well, what do you all think about it? Mr. Best says, well, that old fan found one dog she couldn't keep up with.
Yeah.
She could not run.
Yeah.
Says that's the best dog I've ever run with yet, ever seen.
What age was that when you were at that time?
How old was he?
Uh-huh.
He is about 3 or 4 years old.
Well, is that prime for a
yeah.
dog?
Yeah. And his dog was 3, and mine is 3 or 4, or somewhere along there. As best I remember about it, it's about the same age. That's when they really are good, if you run them and train them right. So that...
How long do they last?
Well,
good run.
You'll find one will last till it's 12 years old. I'm not for sure that I asked my brother-in-law, I left him up in Alabama when I came to Florida, and one of his puppies and one of his mate's puppies. And, well, there's grown dogs, there's about 7 years old when I came to Florida, and he is 10. He'd still run all night long at 10 years old.
Yeah.
So that I asked
But you don't care generally, you're not setting a record generally. You don't care whether they just get out here in the field or not.
Beg your pardon?
I say, you're not racing generally, so you don't care whether they're just at the field
like
or not.
What I hunt for mostly is because I just like to hear them run
yeah,
and watch them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
well, you just soon have a 10-year-old dog or not.
Well, I like I always like a dog that don't matter who I go with, I'm not ashamed to turn it loose. you want to have good ones as good as anyone else has, you see. And it don't cost any more to feed a good one than it does a sorry.
Yeah.
So that was about the third dog I'd ever owned in my life. I was young then.
Now that's the dog like you got now.
Yeah, the same flag tail dog.
The flag tail.
And had the blanket bags. And these are the nearest that I've ever had. Especially that, and I showed you the picture that I lost, and I'd add some more flag tail, a little bit more. See, I lost three or four flag tail just like that, and I showed you the picture, and I told you it was my stud dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my stud dog. People bred a lot of gyps to that dog.
Yeah.
And I've always kept, when I hunted, always kept good dogs, and I had stud dogs or females one.
Mm-hmm.
And breed. I don't breed dogs just to sell or anything like that. I breed them when I need some or replace some that I've lost.
Mm.
And I can't buy, I don't have money to buy dogs the kind I want. And I have to raise them and train them. Then I train them a little different than most people that hunts anyway. So the dog that you raise and train, it understands you better.
Yeah.
And
well, that's kind of like a horse.
Horse or anything else.
Train a horse yourself, they understand you better than they do.
Yeah, and you understand them too, and you know how to handle them. See, they're all different dispositions. Horses is.
I don't know that I ever saw anybody training a dog like this.
Well, you see, I carry mine out, and I don't show them how to run. I don't put them after nothing, don't say nothing, just turn them loose. If you could have got a picture of some of mine when I had that good trained pack and all these dogs was young when I was able to hunt before I couldn't hunt much. I had a good trained pack, you know, and I'd go out there and everyone I had and just opened up that car, the back of it, and the ones that was in the back would come and go to the front. Go out to where the car was headed.
Oh.
I hadn't trained to do that, then I'd open my door. I couldn't take the dogs out and put them in the car. I'd just open and let them learn to get in there.
Well, is that the way they learn the best, just having them in a good pack?
Yeah. It's easier to do that, to have good dogs than keep them in the kennel together, you know, puppies, and bring them up and put them out. It's a lot of sport, and it's just like training horses or anything else. You know, you got to train anything. Of course, these been bred for fox and cats so much until it's born then. We don't breed nothing but the best.
Well, what are some of the things you do when you train?
Well, the main thing we do is just to carry them to the woods with a trained dog, with one that's already trained like we like for a dog to do, and turn one puppy loose at the time to start with. So he gets running, then you can turn another one loose, maybe. Do that a time or two after them, walk around and take them. The old dogs will be running and have it kind of run down, you know, Then we carry our young dogs and walk around where that they're running at, and the fox come by, it's wild, these puppies go running. And we don't start them with rabbits. I don't.
Oh, you, and then the fox will come by and you turn your dog.
Yeah, and I know where that they're dodging at, and I'll walk around. If I see them crossing anywhere, I'll take these puppies and walk right across the track, you know. 9 times out of 10, some of them pick his track up. I had to pick him up 3 months old. First time he carried him out.
That's 3 months old?
Yes, sir. Pick him up in that little tail, just go to waggling, they'd go trailing.
Yeah.
Never been carried in the woods before.
Yeah.
Frank, my nephew over there, has got one now that he and I carried his mate out. That big dog mine is the daddy of, and I had another little gyp there that I bred to and raised. He's got it now.
Is that pretty good to get them started young?
Yeah, it's really better to start them if you don't let them run too much. I run one puppy at 4 months old. It got away with a hard running dog I had, and the place couldn't catch it. And it must have run 5 hours hard with him trying to keep up. And he never could keep up after that. Late that afternoon, when I found him, he just couldn't walk. He'd run so hard.
Well, he really had the instinct.
He had it and never did quit. Well, he couldn't keep up with his mates and his mother and his daddy. I had them. I sold it to a fella at Newberry and told him that he couldn't keep up with my pack. And he was just a little over a year old then, but I'd watch him run about 50, 100 yards behind all the time when you'd see him. And I didn't. Make me think that I hated it because I let him get away. I caught the other two and then let them run too long. They went off after a different fox with the mother. And sometimes you want to run too hard to take them out too young. But
so you run that chance?
Yeah.
Well, you could.
That's the only ones I ever damaged and turned loose that I didn't get to catch because I can't do that now. I've got to let the dogs get older. Then I can't go out there and catch them like a good then. I knew how, and there's plenty of fox then.
But you got to call the old dog in.
You can't stop one. You got to catch it and you get after the fox till they tree it. They won't quit.
They won't quit.
No. You see, if you do that, you get to doing that directly. They'll quit when you want them to go on. That isn't a good policy.
You've got to let them go on.
Just let them go on and they tree it.
And then if you got to go home, just go on.
Well, the way I do that, after I train them to come back and lie down, we'll put them out there. See if we'll put them out there.
Yeah.
Those two old dogs, we left one of them in, I never did finish that telling how what the judges said. I ought to have that right in one just before we change the subject. The judges give this dog of mine on that race, his name was Lead, Alabama Lead. And the judges gave him 100% win on hunting, striking, trailing, speeding, driving, and endurance. He won it on all. That's unusual for one dog to win on all of it, but he is the highest scored on everything.
On hunting?
Striking.
Trailing?
Trailing, speed, and driving. Now then, you ought to go to some of these big, like the state meets, you'd enjoy it. You could. I'm a visitor, I can't go anymore. I'm going to put all these dogs in. They run 3 mornings, and you get to see people from all over the country in different states, and they run 3 mornings. They're 5 hours each morning before they call a hunt off. And they catch a dog, come back, trotting around, not hunting, working. 5 minutes, before that time's out, they scratch him for loafing. And if he barks, not after on the fox track, they scratch him for babbling. And if he's cutting and not following the track, the fox.
That is the end of the tape from the Grundig of Mike Weaver's that I've transferred. It was on two sides, two tapes from the Grundig. Now that's the end of it on this one. This is channel one over. This is around 565. This is channel one over around 565. And it's the end of the two tapes from the Grundig that I've just transferred. This is the end of the two tapes from the Grundig that I've just transferred, and it's now up around 568 or 70, about 570. I don't know the date of these tapes from the Grundig. And I don't know either which comes first. I just don't know. I don't guess it matters too much which of these two tapes from the Grundig comes first.
You're going to find this quite exciting, really. And incidentally, the music in the background is played on a harmonica. You might have heard it called a mouth organ. But pleasant music it is, as you might hear it played around Okefenokee country.
Southeastern corner of Georgia, touching on the Florida border, lies the Okefenokee Swamp, 630 square miles of wilderness, one of the most primitive and untouched spots in the United States. Now a national wildlife refuge, it is a place of mystery, of strange sights and sounds. What's New is going to explore the swamp, which will enter from the Okefenokee Swamp Park on U.S. 1, 8 miles south of Waycross, Georgia. Visitors are not usually permitted to stay overnight in the swamp, but we've gotten special permission to camp. Johnny, our guide, loads the boat. We'll go on a tour of the zoo at the Okefenokee Swamp Park. This part of the swamp is all many visitors take time to see.
You take the otter, for instance. The little fella out here, he's one of the greatest swimmers we have in the swamp here. One of the nicest animals, I guess, that you find in the Okefenokee. And those things, when they are real small, it's just about the size of a house cat's kitten, very small, when they're born. And she generally keeps them up in the den. Now, these otters, we had them born here in captivity. The Oscar the alligator, now he's been with us about 12 years. And Oscar, all you got to do, he can be coming down the trail. He's got used to about feeding time. And when the boys announce over the mic over here, we're going to feed the otters and give a lecture over under the shutter. Well, here comes the old alligator. He wants to have lunch, too. And when those alligators, Oscar and Susie, come in together, both of them up at the same time, usually Susie will eat about 2 fish, and Oscar, he'll eat about 3. Kind of like a boy and a girl going down to a hamburger store, you know. A lot of times, a boy, he'll go down, he'll eat a couple, and the girl, one, you know. In fooling the animals, a whole lot of times, it's patient what gets you.
Meanwhile, Johnny was ready with the boat to take our What's New cameras into the swamp.
If I was going in there to stay for any length of time, I wouldn't carry anything but some meal. And carry me some meal and some grease and some coffee, and that's all I'd want. I'd get the rest of what I wanted right out there in the swamp. Of course, a person couldn't survive out there without it carrying anything in there with it. Move it in the water, just twist your pole and it'll guide your boat any way you want. But there's an art to poling a boat.
Well, out in the swamps, they'll eat turtles and they'll eat snakes, birds, just anything they can catch. Little small animals.
I have heard people, a lot of men tell me that the old alligators would eat the young, but I've never known of that. I've never saw it. It could be so, but I never did see it in my lifetime. I've had a lot of tangles with them. I never was bit with by one. I shot one, been about 33 years ago. I shot one, and I thought I had killed him, and I laid my gun down and waded in the water to get him, and he got me when I waded in there. He got me by the leg. I had to job his eyes and put my thumbs in his eyes and finally got his mouth open and drug him out. I got his skin, though, before I left there. I brought the skin when I come. At that time, we was hunting the alligators for their skins. Of course, at that time, we only got $1.50 for a 7-foot alligator. The government owns it now, and there's no alligator hunting in you. That was way back years ago.
I'd always heard of the Okefenokee called the land of the trembling earth.
Yeah, we have this trembling earth in the swamp, what we call trembling earth. Vegetation that floats on the water, it comes up from the bottom and rise up. Sometimes there'd be places that's 200 yards across it. And it's water all under this. And you can walk across. The person that knows how to walk it can walk right on across it. But a person that don't know how to walk it, he'll get on there and he gets stopped. It's just like walking on spring. Well, you just have to walk just like it. You've got to kind of walk with it, you know. As you step and it springs while you move, and just keep moving with it, and you can go right on across it. But if you stop, it sinks with you. It'll go right down. I saw him go down and have to swim out from the other under it and come out way out yonder and come up. But it'll eventually grows up till it'll make an island. It'll just keep filling up and grow up until it gets solid, or it'll hold up most anything across it. We have a plant grows in here, a bush, what we was always raised to call poor man's soap. It'll make suds and you can wash with it, except in anything that's greasy, it won't cut grease much, but as for dirt, it'll wash it just as good as any soap that you ever seen. Just make all pretty suds. I mean, a lot of them, too. Just take the leaves, pull the leaves from the plant and roll them in your hand and wet it with water, and it's just like taking soap in your hand.
I ask why the swamp water is so black.
Well, that's caused mostly from the tannic acid, from the barks of the trees, cypress trees, and the foliage from the trees and things that causes it black. The water in the swamp is healthy. I've drunk it all my life, and all of the old timers all ahead of me, we never knew what it was to take drinking water in the swamp. Drink this water out in the swamp while you just live to be a... You just don't hardly ever die. Bears are mighty shy. That's the reason I say they're smart. They're about the smartest wild animal that you ever saw in your life. Gum tree in the swamp. It has these old blueberries, and we call them gumberries. I've saw every limb where a bear climb it, go up and just stand there and reach over and catch them limbs and pull them back over and break them off. And you eat the bears off, I turn the limb loose and let it fall and reach and get him another and pull it back over and break a limb not strong enough to hold him and walk out there on him. You know, you just pull it over and break them off and eat the bears off and let her go. We call the bonnet lily. The good Lord furnished the fish out there, and he furnished the bait right along with it, a person that knows how to get it. Just pull up the stem, them big long stem that grows up out of the water with a leaf on top, and just pull that stem up and split it open, your worm right in the stem. That's where he lives, in that stem. And they'll bite him quicker than anything you can put out there.
Yeah, the people ask me a lot of times in the swamp, yeah, can you go in and catch all the fish that you want? And, well, that depends on how good a fisherman you are. And there is one place in the swamp there that you can go and catch all the fish you want, because we're not going to tell anyone where that place is, just keeping that for ourselves. I think one of the best ways of fishing in the swamp here is with the old cane pole. But, and then if that don't work, well, about the only thing left to do is just crawl in there and start cooling them out. And the way you do that, you just get out into the water there and feel around these logs and stumps and things, and just feel for them till you feel them, and then catch them with your hands and put them in the boat. Yeah, there was one time we was out there fishing, and we'd fished pretty near all day and hadn't caught any. You know, the swamp is just like anywhere else. Like I told you a while ago, it's not everybody that can catch them out there all the time. But that was one of the days that was kind of rough, so we fished on till pretty late that evening. We didn't have any fish. And finally, we noticed over in the water there a little riffles making up. And we go over there, and we noticed that there was about a 6-pound bass there. It was wallowing around. We reached down and caught him. We found out he had about a 3-pound bass in his mouth and hung up, and he was just struggling trying to get rid of it. So we had plenty of fish after all.
The swamp with old man Carter, old Uncle Tom Carter. Me and him fished together a lot. But practically every week we were in the swamp fishing. We was out with on big water. We were fishing it late in the afternoon, and we pulled our boat out on kind of a little loop that run out of the lake, and we was tied up there fishing, and we kept hearing a fuss upside of the lake. And of course we didn't know exactly what it was, and we kept watching up there. I did. He didn't pay it much mind. After a while, I saw a bear come up to the edge of the lake from out of the jungles, and there was an alligator laying about halfway, right about middleways of the lake. And the bear jumped in the water and went swimming on through. He never did see us, not that we knowed of. And the alligator, just before the bear got there, the alligator sunk down under the water. And he went down, when the bear got right along about where we saw the alligator sink, we saw the bear sink. He just went down under the water, and we could see the mud. And